All right. People
This
keep
meeting is
interrupting,
being
and I'll keep
recorded.
admitting them. So if I get a little bit distracted, no worries. It's just me trying to do multiple things. One of the things that I've learned in my practice and probably from the pandemic is I have become more technology astute than I was before and can find out that I can manage a lot more things than I was able to do before. A couple of little housekeeping matters as we sort of get started here this morning. First of all, hopefully all of you can see the PowerPoint screen. Everybody see that? Is everybody able to see the PowerPoint? Good. Thank you, Matt, for giving me a thumbs up so that I know everybody can see it. As noted earlier, this session is being recorded. So if you don't feel comfortable, you can turn off your video cameras. You can leave them on, however you want to address that concern. Also, to let you know that the chat function is also available on the Zoom, which I can have up and going so I can read any messages. Right now, everyone entered is muted, but you do have the ability to unmute yourself if there are particular questions that you want to ask. Number two, we are working on getting this Administrator Academy approved. So you'll get more information later to be able to get your Administrator Academy credits for this webinar series. We will be working with one of the regional offices of education, particularly through Teach Illinois, to make it available. And so we're still working out some of the details, but you'll get more information about that as we go through further. Also, just as a bit of housekeeping matters, today is a little bit different because normally we don't do these breakout sessions. There'll be a couple of these where we will have separate breakout sessions from Missouri to Illinois because there will be some state-specific issues that are going to be addressed. But generally, it's federal law and whatever is applicable in one state is also applicable in the other. And if there are any differences, those will definitely be noted. So this is going to be one of the times when you'll be asked to go over to a separate meeting room, which is a Zoom room. But those are all, I think there's only two or three of those which will come into play for this series. And as I mentioned, at the end of this presentation, we will send out an email to you advising you how you can also, again, watch the recording. And you will also be given, and also included within that email will be a PDF of today's PowerPoint presentation. So I think we're good. And if you have any more housekeeping matters, put them in the chat box. Otherwise, I think we're going to kind of get started with our hot topics in Illinois. I am going to start this out by saying it's a good thing you guys aren't over in the Missouri room because they have a whole lot more hot topics than we really have here in Illinois. It's more active in Missouri with respect to laws requesting having dealing with parental rights, which we don't have currently happening in Illinois. They have book banning issues that are in Missouri, which I have not seen arise in Illinois. So there are a few little different things, but not, they're a little bit more active politically as far as legislation, et cetera. What I will say to all of you right now is, as you know, we're right now in a lame duck set or in a sort of a lame duck session, so to speak. We have a race for a governor coming up in a few weeks. We have representatives that are going to be elected, some new state senators that are going to be elected. Illinois historically during this period of time does not rush to do a lot of legislation. And that's pretty clear, particularly this legislative cycle. When the Supreme Court issued its decision involving abortion, we heard Governor Pritzker come out very forcefully at first saying Illinois was going to adopt legislation to address how Illinois views abortion and would make it sort of a welcoming place for those states that do not have such a welcoming environment. And he's not been able to get that done. And the General Assembly is just not, in this political climate right now, is probably not going to be very active until after that November election occurs. And we see what happens during the course of the election. So don't anticipate any type of legislation coming across that's going to affect schools. I think the only one that may come into play is going to be the Safety Act, which really is not going to have a huge impact on Illinois public schools. So we're kind of going to get started here. As I think I probably never mentioned, is my name is Mary Rhodes. I am one of the shareholders here at Tooth Keeney, and I concentrate my practice in the fine state of Illinois. I have been practicing more years than I really care to admit that I've been practicing, but it is over 30. And my time has been exclusively with respect to Illinois school law. So I come from a background of a lot of varying experiences. And so hopefully I can share some of that with you today. So here's kind of the things we're going to sort of talk about on our agenda. Number one topic that I will say has affected most school districts in the state are these national sex ed standards. If you've not heard about them, I'm surprised, because they are the hottest topic we probably have here in Illinois. Number two, we're going to talk about threat assessments. There's been a big push in Illinois for there to be addressed threat assessments. And then number three is parent rights, which is starting to sort of bubble up and starting to kind of rise to the forefront with respect to the upcoming election, in that a lot of candidates are now running on platforms advocating certain parent rights, wanting Illinois to shift, wanting to take away some of the authority of the Illinois State Board of Education in mandating curriculums. That's particularly highlighted by the National Sex Ed Standards. We're starting to see CRT come into play in Illinois. And so these are sort of the hot topics that are involved. There are some that are books and libraries, and this right to know information shared with school personnel. This has to do with largely the LGBTQ issue. And if a student says that they want to identify as a different sex, gender, whatever, then an obligation to tell the parents. And there's a lot of activity in this area. It's kind of in Illinois right now, kind of underground, but it's going to start hitting here fairly soon. We're also going to have a separate Principals Academy session that's going to address these LGBTQ issues. So I'm not going to address those necessarily in the hot topics, but I do want to talk about this issue. One of the things that I don't have on my PowerPoint, because it just happened yesterday, was the governor signing a new executive order, which removed the obligation for unvaccinated staff to test twice a week for COVID-19. So that just happened yesterday. And is now in effect. So that's also a big change that just happened. And unfortunately, my PowerPoint was done before I looked at the governor's executive order. So we're kind of going to get started here on the issue of the National Sex Ed Standards. And I will tell you, probably my entire month of July and August, I was dealing with this issue in one manner or another. Some of you may have received communications from parents talking about wanting to opt out of the National Sex Education Standards. And I just kind of want to kind of go back and talk a little bit about what this issue really is and how your district should probably look at it. First of all, the law came into effect when Governor Pritzker signed it on August 20th, 2021. So we're now have this law out there for more than 1 year. And basically, when Governor Pritzker signed it, he said he was touting it as modernizing our sex education standards and will help keep children safe and ensure important lessons like consent and internet safety are taught in the classroom. And the comments you saw from most educators go, we already did this. I think I even saw one comment just recently saying, other than internet safety, we were taught these same things back in 1971 when we were in school. I know when I was in school, again, we're not going to talk about how many years ago that was, but when I was in school, we had a session on sex education and we talked about abstinence. We talked about consent. We talked about a lot of these things that this law touts. Now, what this law really did was it directed ISBE to develop a curriculum based upon what those national sex ed standards are. As far as I understand it, and I haven't gone back and looked at every state's curriculum, but Illinois is like the leader in having the national sex education standards allegedly adopted as their sex education curriculum. The other key provision of the law is it provides an opt-out provision if teaching the national sex ed standards. There's also, I don't have it on the PowerPoint, but there's also a little bit of an interesting twist in the legislation itself. And it talks about how you can guide these consistent with community standards, which I find it interesting and see that we don't have anybody talking addressing it. By the way, I do have a question in the chat. So are they not required to test at all? The answer to that's no, they're not required to test at all. Just remember, however, and I'm going back to the COVID-19, sorry about that. I'm going back to the COVID-19. However, just remember that to be eligible for those sick leave days, or I shouldn't say sick leave days, those administrative leave days, that they, if they're unvaccinated, they're not eligible for those days, unless you have a CBA or other provision which allows for that. Now, back to the national sex education standards. So it does have a provision in there which talks about the community having a right or developing these consistent with what is within your community and how much you want to deal with this. It was interesting when this law came out, I had a client who had what they call their senior seminar. The senior seminar basically required each student to take this class in order to be able to receive a diploma from that particular high school, which dealt with certain sex education topics, which were, a lot of them were within the national sex education standards, except for the focus on LGBTQ+, some of the other provisions that are within the national sex ed standards. So what I did, so in helping that district kind of navigate through this, I started looking at and developing sort of this chart, which I'm gonna put up on the screen in the next two slides. And basically what this chart does is it identifies on the left, the children health, education requirements, which are still within the Illinois school code, meaning these topics that are in that left-hand column, every Illinois school district is required to teach. On the right-hand side of the column are the national sex education requirements, which you can see that those are optional. So what are you required to teach within in Illinois? You're required to teach proper nutrition. You're required to teach physical fitness. You're required to teach dangers and avoidance of abduction. So those are still the requirements under CHEP. Now, here's where we sort of kind of get into a little bit of the nuts and bolts of the difference that's on the slide. So again, on the left, it shows the CHEP requirements. On the right, it shows the national sex education standards. So that CHEP requirement is components necessary to develop a sound mind in a healthy body. That's a pretty broad statement about what you're required to teach. It goes down into, and you start seeing like some of a little bit of the same language that appears in that national sex education standards. It says consent and healthy relationships, anatomy and physiology, puberty and adolescent sexual development. And here's where I think we start carving out where probably some of the differences are, is that gender identity and expression, sexual orientation and identity. We've always taught sexual health and interpersonal violence, and everybody's taught those under those CHEP standards, when we're talking about components necessary to develop a sound mind and a healthy body. Then the second column, it has age-appropriate sexual abuse and assault awareness prevention. So those are what you're required to teach as part of CHEP. The National Sex Education Standards provide consent, which means an affirmative, knowing, conscious, ongoing, and voluntary agreement to engage in interpersonal, physical, or sexual activity, which can be revoked at any point, including during the course of interpersonal, physical, or sexual activity, which most school districts, when they taught the curriculum dealing with age-appropriate sexual abuse and assault awareness and prevention, taught basically those same standards. Then you have, finally, down here, the other standard, which is social responsibilities of family life, including sexual abstinence until marriage, the prevention and control of disease, including the prevention, transmission, and spread of AIDS. But look at that note that I have there. Parents were already allowed under the CHEP standards to opt out of those requirements. What it didn't require is the specific notices that is now required under the National Sex Education Standards statute, which has specific notice requirements. So that's a little bit of the difference. This one had, if you look at the National Sex Education Standards, sexual behaviors that lead to sexually transmitted infections, including HIV and unintended pregnancy. So I think what this really highlights is that you're not totally removing away from any sex education teaching. There is certain requirements right now that still exist within the Illinois school code. The difference is that those CHEP requirements sort of give you a little bit more flexibility than doing the National Sex Education Standards. And quite honestly, you can probably get by with most of these things within these standards, the CHEP standards, without calling them National Sex Education Standards. So it's a very interesting issue. Now, the only thing that happens with this is that district is required to notify the ISBE if they have opted out or if they are going to teach the National Sex Education Standards or they're not. Now, if you're teaching the National Sex Education Standards, then they have the option of opting out of the entire set of sex education standards. Whereas under CHEP, the only option to remove yourself are those social responsibilities of family life, including sexual abstinence until marriage, the prevention and control of disease, including the prevention, transmission, and spread of AIDS. So this is a really interesting little topic. Now, whether the Illinois State Board of Education is going to take sort of any actions, so to speak, to address this, remains to be seen. We'll see where ISB is going. I will tell you that I think most districts south of I-80 have adopted board policies, which have specifically stated that they are opting out of the National Sex Ed Standards. I will also tell you that when parents come in and talk to school administrators about what they're teaching, and once they're sort of bring some clarity as to what they're actually doing within the curriculum and can show them exactly what the curriculum looks like, parents aren't objecting to it. And that's what we found out in my example of the district that had a senior seminar, which required certain sexual health teaching, so to speak, that once parents were sat down with the principal and the principal actually explained to the parent, this is what we're actually doing. Parents are like, this isn't anything different than what we were taught in school ourselves. And they're not objecting or requesting that students be able to opt out of those topics. I think the point that I'm trying to make here is that some of this is some communications that you as principals can have with your community about the actual curriculum that you're teaching and have them understand that you're not talking necessarily about the hot topics that concern them under the National Sex Education Standards, such as the LGBTQ+ concerns. And that seems to be what I'm hearing, at least from my end, what a lot of the issues are that are coming to the forefront. If you have any comments on this, want any more clarification on this, please put your comments in the chat. Also, as I said, you do have the ability to unmute yourself. So if you're brave enough, knowing that this is recording and want to ask your question, please feel free to do that as well. All right. So now that I probably have made that about as clear as mud for you, we're kind of going to move on to the next topic. And this happens to do with threat assessments. And this has become sort of a topic that's been in the forefront of nationally for some period of time. And every district is required to have some type of threat assessment policy. If your district subscribes to PRESS, you will see that your district has such a policy and it's policy 4190. What I don't know that principals understand is the roles that principals are required to engage in under this policy 4190 that have been adopted. By the way, policy 4190 has a lot of exhibits and different administrative procedures. It's probably one of the more denser policies that are located within the PRESS policies. What does this policy do? It requires a superintendent or designee, and it should say instead of to develop and implement a targeted school violence prevention program. And there also must be a, quote, building level threat assessment team or teams. So each of your buildings within your district should now have such a threat assessment team that has been assembled. If your building does not have one, please make sure that you communicate with your superintendent and get that arranged to get that training. Now, I'm gonna go on to, as I said, there's a lot of different administrative procedures and different things that are involved in threat assessment. So there's policy 4190 AP1, which is administrative procedure one. First of all, that document contains various definitions. Each principal should go back and look at that AP1 and familiarize yourself with the definitions. And it becomes pretty critical because you need to know what really is a threat. Everybody looks at something that might be a threat differently than others, but this actually has the definitions which your district, assuming that they've adopted this administrative procedure, will be following. It establishes the following key strategic procedures. There has to be a comprehensive safety and security plan that is developed that addresses school emergency operations and crisis response plan. Now, there are two sort of concepts that go on to play here. The first concept we have under these threat assessments are literally to have safety protocols in place, where we talk about fire drills, where we talk about tornado drills, where we talk about school safety drills, et cetera. That's one set. I'm not talking about those threat assessments when I'm talking about this. What I'm talking about is if you know of or are aware of any type of incident that may end up affecting the school community. And we're not talking necessarily just school shootings, although after Uvalde, that is clearly in the forefront of everyone's minds. But we're talking about different options of threat assessments. I'm going to kind of give you what my take is on the threat assessments, but look at the red highlighted portion that's on the PowerPoint. It says it requires district staff, volunteers, and contractors to report to the building principal any expression of intent to harm another person concerning communication or concerning behavior that suggests an individual may intend to commit an act of targeted violence. So what we're really talking about here is somehow getting notices out to your community members and let them know that if they're aware of any targeted violence that is going to occur in the school system, that the principal automatically be notified of the particular piece of targeted violence. You're also required under this administrative procedure to provide training to staff about how to identify a threat. So again, that's an obligation that sort of is given to school administrators that they need to look at and that they need to sort of follow. Now, then on this policy, there's administrative procedure 2, which then says what we have to do with these threat assessment teams. First of all, it is led by the building principal and must include the following members, if available: an administrator, a teacher, school counselor, school psychologist, school social worker, law enforcement official. You can change school counselor and a school social worker. And what I mean by that is that if you're talking about a school counselor, school social worker, those two terms can be used interchangeably. So that's one of the obligations that the principal has. Then there also has to be a triage team, a threat assessment triage team. And what that team does is it screens the information to determine if there are sufficient resources available or a referral is needed to the full threat assessment team, generally consists of at least 2 members, which would be, and there's different documents that you can see that are also included within this triage team. What basically, if you kind of look at how this is all set up, so what happens is that you do initial training for threat assessments. You need to do that training for both students, for your staff. And when we talk about staff, it needs to be broad-based. Also remember that this includes contractors. So don't forget your coaching staff to the extent that they're not members of your current faculty. Also, if you happen to contract out food service, janitorial service, bus driving service. One of the things that I mentioned to districts when we start talking about threat assessments is to remember that we definitely need to include our bus drivers in these kind of discussions, whether they're employees of the district or they're contracted out bus drivers, to identify and know what a threat is and to immediately get that to the administrator. Then what the principal is going to do with that information is going to decide which of these sort of triage team members ought to be included in the discussion. So you've got several people who are included in the threat assessment team. So the administrator will need to have at least 2 of those folks talk about a meeting, talk about the threat. It doesn't have to be an official meeting, some type of communication, which they look at the threat and decide what kind of threat is this? What are we really talking about here? Is it something that we need to look at? Then the threats are typically categorized into 4 different categories. There's low, there's moderate, moderate high, and then there's high. So you look at the sort of the 4 threats and you look at it in a tier. If it's a low threat, it's not that you're not going to ignore it. It means that you may need to put some interventions in place or continue to monitor it. And the reason why I put that in there and say that you need to have some type of a system, whether it's building-wide or district-wide, to identify these threat assessments is because what we know about violence in schools and from statistics that have been reported out there is that, first of all, it's not unknown to somebody, and the person who actually is involved in committing the threat or involved in committing a physical act has given lots of notices out there and may have been students that you have been involved with at a lower level, but you've not been able to sort of see the history or the trend of the escalation. We also know that as far as threats go to school, that there is no quote profile end quote of the person that is likely to commit an offense against the school. The only thing that we do know when we talk about these threat assessments are there individuals who have a grudge and feel somehow personally wronged. And we also know from the history of all of this that these individuals would have expressed their intent to do some harm or to take some action before. But we also know that there's typically a buildup. So it starts at the lower levels and then it starts escalating. So you don't want to get involved up here when it's escalated. You want to try to address it down at the lower levels to prevent school districts from, or prevent some type of violence that may be happening within your school district. So remember that there are all of these different exhibits under this Administrative Procedure 2, which talks about the principles of threat assessment documentation, threat assessment key areas and questions, and gives examples, responding to types of threats, and threat assessment case management strategies. So be sure to look out for those documents that have already been developed for you and make sure that you have them handy and are ready to address threat assessments. What is that overall goal of the TAT? It's education and awareness. The purpose is to provide material for students, school employees, and parents and guardians. It has an intake assessment and response process. It tells you how you should respond to various forms of what you would consider to be a threat, and communication and information sharing. Now, interestingly enough, I did a threat assessment presentation to a school district at the start of the school year. I was heavily involved with them in addressing and creating their threat assessment process and their protocols. It happens to be a what's considered to be a large urban school district. So they have multiple buildings, multiple administrators. It's definitely a community that has a lot of diversity within it. One of the concerns that this district had and kept getting a report back from ISB was the number of disciplinary incidents that were imposed on students, particularly students that were minorities. I am pleased to report that since we started putting the threat assessment procedures in place, that those have gone down from previous years, because they're looking at it at the very beginning of whatever the ultimate conflict is and addressing the conflict at the very basic level. So it ends up not having the number of exclusions. So right now, that's sort of a good test. I will wait and see how it goes throughout the rest of the school year. When I talked with one of the administrators within the school, as of 4 weeks into the school year, in previous years when they've had full attendance, I'm not talking about 21-22 school year or the 21-22 school year, but talking about the beginning of school years prior to COVID, I guess the 20 and 21 school years, but before COVID, that they had at the beginning of the school year at least 10 expulsion hearings or some type of long-term out-of-school removal. This year, since they've been using the threat assessment process, they have actually had none at the time in which this happened. So it is something to look at. It's something that we need to pay attention to. And it's something that I think ISBE is going to continue to monitor on how threat assessments are going to be looked at. I think that there's going to be a lot of focus on threat assessments. I think they're going to ask a lot of data from you about how you're implementing your threat assessments. So be on the lookout out and be aware that that is sort of an issue that's sort of creeping up. But get on the front end of it, look at those policies and begin addressing that. Also, I've got a slide here which has the TAT committee's responsibilities, which talks about the various obligations. Remember that some of this is the training that I've already mentioned. There is collaborative working with the community, because we know with a lot of threat assessments that a lot of those come, that community members are aware of threat assessments, but not necessarily school administrators. You have to provide training and make sure you take possible reports of threats. Now, we're going to start talking about the other part, which is going to be a more interesting part after we get up to the election. And then depending on how the election in November comes out, what kind of things we're going to be looking at. I think that, first of all, the first slide is a list of sort of parent advocacy groups, and I've included in the slides sort of links to their website pages, which identify where they are active in addressing schools. I can tell you that overall, here is where their focus is at. They are saying, get rid of a lot of the mandates of curriculum, i.e. the National Sex Education Standards and a lot of the other standards that have sort of been infused, and just let educators teach reading, writing, and math, and leave all the other education components to families and parents. And, you know, and both parties have legitimate debates on whether schools are the appropriate location where certain topics should be taught. And part of that is going to be based upon whatever your local community standards happen to be. But this organization called Parents' Rights in Education, they're focusing obviously on the National Sex Ed Standards, although I think now that school has started, I think that since districts have adopted policies opting out, since there have been some open conversations, that topic has kind of waned a little bit. It wasn't as hot as it was at the start of the school year. The second piece that they are focused on is teaching LGBTQ history. And remember that that's going to be yet another component which all of you are going to face throughout the school year, and asking what you're doing. They went to abolishing Illinois public school history classes. And here they're sort of getting into the critical race theory and topics having to do with race discrimination or other types of discrimination that are taught, like Asian discrimination, different Hispanic. Also, I find it interesting that they want to do away with social emotional learning standards. So they don't want to have that social emotional learning topics taught within a school district. They look at this as being a choice that is should be left up to the parents. Probably one of the more vocal groups is this Awake Illinois. They are looking at, obviously, the comprehensive sex education standards. Their focus on is saving women's sports. And then the third one is a consistent one is, again, that critical race theory. The Save Women's Sports has to do with allowing individuals who have transitioned from male to female to be able to participate in athletic competition. There's going to be some movement that's going to be probably pretty interesting to watch in that topic. I don't think that the Office of Civil Rights or the U.S. Department of Education has really dealt with how this is going to address, end up in the end, addressing the requirements for equal participation in Title IX. While I'm on that topic, just let you know, this topic of equity in women's sports is rising again. I'm working with a school district right now that's had an ongoing Title IX investigation with regard to sex equity in sports and participation. And there are several cases that are pending, one that may go to the United States Supreme Court out of Michigan State. So this is going to be another topic that might be bubbling up. And so don't be surprised if you start seeing this, and you might want to start looking at some proactive stance in looking at your data, et cetera. The next one is this Alliance Defending Freedom. Again, their focus is on the right to direct the child's upbringing. They wanting to have politicized public education removed. Again, their focus is on just teach the basics, reading, writing, math, English, grammar, those kind of things. And school districts should stay out of the business of teaching other sort of topics. They also talk about gender identity politics and quote, and hidden quote, healthcare. And again, that goes back to what I'm gonna bring up is gonna be the next topic, has to do with sort of these LGBTQ related issues and how we're addressing students. For those that have joined the presentation a little bit later, lately, remember that we do have a separate one of these administrator academy or principals academies that is focused on that LGBTQ plus topic, which it will be hit upon in far more extensive detail than I'm going to do in this sort of hot topic section. So please log in to that discussion because I think it'll be very informative. But what I'm going to talk about is sort of where we're at as far as current litigation. The first case is litigation that's currently ongoing in Maryland. And it's the Association for Education of Fairness versus the Montgomery County Board of Education. And basically the district adopted certain guidelines as to how they're going to treat individuals related to gender identity. And what happened in this case, it was just decided a few weeks ago, the court denied the parents' challenge to guidelines that purport to allow students to transition socially to a different gender identity without parent notice or consent. So that's what's going on right now in Maryland. We know that that case is going to end up being appealed to a federal court, to a federal appellate court. So we're going to get more guidance. We know that the whole focus of this is going to be to get this over to the United States Supreme Court. And so we're going to start seeing a lot of litigation on this issue that's going to come up. The second case I want to talk about is this Little John versus School Board of Leon County, Florida. That's currently pending before the United States District Court for the Northern District of Florida. By the way, this lawsuit has just been filed within the last week or so. And pending before the court in that one is plaintiff's complaint that the district implemented a protocol and trained district staff to conceal from parents information regarding their children's assert of a discordant gender identity. And I'm quoting that directly from how they have specifically pled the complaint. So just remember that these are all in the very new era. So we'll keep watching these and transitioning these. And when we get to that LGBTQ presentation, we'll certainly highlight some more of these as we sort of go forward. The next one that I want to talk about is this Doe versus Madison Metropolitan School District. This is a case that arises out of Wisconsin, but it's a case that's pending that has been pending in the Wisconsin state court system. So it doesn't have any federal impact at the moment. And what happened here is that state court judge issued an injunction preventing the district from, quote, applying or enforcing any policy, guideline, or practice that allows or requires district staff to conceal information or to answer untruthfully in response to any question that parents ask about their child at school, including information about the name and pronouns being used to address their child at school. The injunction did not prevent a student from transition at school without notice or consent of parents. So this is still pending. So what this case is really about, they want to go a little bit further in this case. In this case, they want to make sure that if a student comes into the school system and says, hey, I now want to identify as binary, that if that student decides to identify as binary, that the parents would automatically be notified of that request and that they can deal with it at the home. The court, what they did here is to say, if a parent comes in and asks you about it, you have to be truthful and you have to answer it. However, you don't have the first obligation to go forward and tell the parent that this is in fact happening. So that's kind of a little bit of an interesting twist. The other interesting twist about this is that the parents asked if they could remain anonymous. They didn't want the school district to know that this group of parents was filing a lawsuit against the particular district. The purported reason for that is that they were concerned about some type of retaliation that might occur by having their identities known. The Wisconsin Supreme Court allowed the parents to remain anonymous from the school district, but did recognize that the school district's legal counsel needed to know this information to be able to put up a meaningful defense. So school district counsel was able to know the identities of the individuals that were bringing the lawsuit. However, they were not allowed to ultimately share that with the school district. Now, in this case, I'm not so certain how a school attorney, the attorney representing the school district is going to navigate this. It's probably a big challenge, but we'll see again how this sort of case sort of transitions further. This one is interesting. This is another one out of Wisconsin, but I want you to note that this is pending before the Western District of Wisconsin, which means it's a federal district court case, and Wisconsin happens to be in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. The state of Illinois happens to be in the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. So this is likely going to be the first case that is going to come up in Illinois that we're going to see how we're going to operate Illinois public schools on this issue. So it was just filed on September 7th, 2022. It largely mirrors the prior Wisconsin case in that the parents feel that they have a right to know if their child is transitioned or is transitioning or has expressed that the school district has an affirmative obligation to tell them. The whole theory behind all of these cases is a parent's right to be able to direct the education. And we're starting to see sort of intertwine within the threads or the things of these cases is that parenting is a fundamental right. And therefore, as a fundamental right, they have the right to know this information. So again, if this case will likely be one that we're going to be watching as it kind of goes through the court system. And we also anticipate that this is going to be coming up into the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals. I doubt if either side has got any stomach to be able to resolve or compromise those. Again, the whole focus of all these cases is to be able to get this up to the United States Supreme Court, where I think a lot of groups feel that they're going to get some type of decision that's going to be parents have the right to know. All right, I guess I ended about just right about time. Our hour is almost up. I do leave opportunity for questions. As I mentioned earlier at the beginning, I did mute all of your mics, but I believe that you can also unmute them, or you can feel free to ask a question in the chat box. I'll be happy to respond to questions. As I said, this whole issue of gender identity and the school district's obligation is very fluid right now. We know that we're going to have lots of court cases that are going to be dealing with this. One of the things that I will tell you is that if you have requests for litter boxes in the bathroom, being a cat or identifying as a cat or an animal is not a protected category. And therefore you can say no, that you're not going to do that. Remember that it's all based upon gender and that identifying as an animal is not based upon gender. So as of this time, it's not within the protected category. So does anybody have any questions that they would like to ask? I think I've answered the questions on the governor's new executive order. By the way, I guess I could give you a little bit of update of where I think all the COVID mask litigation is going. Most of the mask litigation as far as students go is going to be resolved. I think the only place that's going to be appealed is going to be from Chicago Public Schools. I don't think that they're going to consent to a statement that they're not going to require masks. So I think that it will end up getting to a court of appeals on this issue. We'll see, but most of the other school districts are not involved in it. And I think everybody is right now having a fairly good school year. We've learned to manage through COVID-19, and everyone seems to be sort of moving along in that respect. I also wonder now, given the governor's executive order yesterday, which basically removed the obligation for unvaccinated individuals to test on a regular basis, that may end a lot of the employee dispute, except again, likely for Chicago Public Schools. Chicago Public Schools has certain testing requirements that have been implemented. It's been done through the collective bargaining process. So I think we will again see Chicago Public Schools taking these cases up through the court system. But I think most other school districts within the state are no longer going to face the litigation. So that's kind of where we're at on everything on the hot topics. If you have any hot topics that you felt is out there that I didn't cover, please put it in the chat box. I'm always interested to see what everyone else is sort of facing out there. We know that the LGBTQ issues are going to be probably your primary issues for the upcoming school year. Like we said, our goal is we will have a more in-depth presentation on that topic. All right, I'll give you a few minutes to be able to put any questions that you want in the chat. Finally, also, while I give you that opportunity, remember that we are working on getting you Administrator Academy credit. We have to go through a regional office of education or some other organization to be able to do that. We think that we will be able to get that done. So I am thrilled to be able to offer that opportunity to you. And we were able to do it last year's session. We hopefully will get that done this year's session. So that will be great. All right. Finally, you'll all receive an email with materials. So if you didn't have an opportunity to previously download it, please do so. And you will also get an email with it and also with access to the recording. So if your colleagues have signed up for this presentation, we're able to sign on today. You can go back and look at it from the beginning. I wish everyone a great day. On to a successful school year. Everybody's reporting that this has been a good school year so far. So I'm very hopeful that this year is going to be a lot different than the last few school years that we've had. So with all that, I'm going to end the presentation and wish you all well.